Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is back in the studio to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management and joins us to offer his expertise. Always a popular show. Call early, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy and your home improvement calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. And when we do that, we welcome Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question for Darren today, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back. Happy holidays, sir.
Thank you, Ray.
You said that you had some holiday-related, winter-related reminders for us, and you also had a little homework.
Correct, and I also have a short quote
to start with. Well, let's start with the quote.
Okay. And I thought it was apropos for this program because it's about a knowledge-based program. So I stumbled upon this quote this week. It's,
right.
The greater our knowledge increases, the greater our ignorance unfolds. It's a JFK quote.
That's very good.
Yeah.
It's very, it's like very true.
The more you know, the more you realize how much you don't know.
So true. So true.
Okay, and then moving on to a public service in reference to some safety items this time of the year. On the news, I've heard, unfortunately, of some fires that have happened, and you know, fires are really bad. People can call in on this program and talk about wet basements and paint peeling and things of that sort. But when you get into something as serious as a fire, it can be bad news. So
yep.
I'd just like to remind everybody to check the batteries in their smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. And this colder weather, when you might choose the use of a small portable heater, that you plug that heater directly into an outlet and not use an extension cord. And the reason for that is that in your home, your wiring is sized appropriately with a circuit breaker. And if too much current is drawn upon that wire, the circuit breaker will trip and protect your home. Whereas if you use an extension cord, it could be too small a gauge and not be protected by that circuit breaker, which could create a fire.
Yep.
And other things that take into consideration this time of year are cleaning furnaces and wood stoves.
Yep.
I know a lot of people, some people burn wood, and chimneys need to be inspected, and wood stove pipes need to be cleaned regularly. I cleaned mine this year, and I was shocked, really, at how much creosote was in the pipe.
Yeah.
And then lastly, regarding a homework assignment, someone had called in on our last show asking about a shark bite plumbing fitting. I'm hesitant to mention plumbing because
it gets to be
whatever you mention
over the show.
People tend to call in about that.
But yeah.
And in any regard, these fittings that are called shark bite fittings or push on fittings, the person wanted to know if they were legal or code approved, and they are. Code approved. I double checked with the International Council of Codes, and those little guys that really help make a plumbing project, home improvement project easier, are code approved.
Well, now we'll have 15 calls on those. So, well, thank you for that one. Darren Tracy is our guest today. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement. The number is 800-348-2551. And Hank in Del Mar. Hank, you're on first.
Thank you. We're remodeling our kitchen. We have a refrigerator presently, and the space that's been allotted for it will leave a less than an eighth of an inch. In some places, the edges of the refrigerator will be right up against the compartment in which it will be installed. Is that allow for adequate ventilation for the refrigerator to operate?
It does. They are designed for basically zero clearance, and it may be difficult to get the unit in and out. You'd want to slide it in and out. And most refrigerators these days, newer refrigerators, are on wheels, or at least two wheels, so you can slide them out and access the condenser to clean the condenser, because that should be cleaned regularly.
That's the vent in the back?
Right, right.
And okay.
It's in the either in the bottom or bottom rear. And they plug up with dirt and dust.
Yeah.
You really need to clean them once a year, or more than once a year. It can really increase the efficiency of your refrigerator and extend the longevity of it as well.
Right. Okay. Can I go through the wall behind it if I put a vent in, a hole?
Go through the wall to do what?
To vacuum the vent in the refrigerator.
Well, it's not a vent. It's a condensing coil. And you need to get the dust off the coil so that there's a good heat transfer. So if you can access with a vacuum cleaner, sure, you can access it any way you want. You don't have to pull it out. You can access it from the backside.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Hank. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement today with Darren Tracy. And Gala in Old Chatham is on.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Okay, so my question is, I live in a house from the 1700s, and the kitchen floor, the whole first floor, has these old pine planks with a lot of gaps and space, and below it is the basement, which is dirt. And the concern is mold. That's in the basement coming up through that. Is there any way of simply creating some kind of protection so that either keeps the mold down from growing, or some kind of barrier that would keep the mold from moving up into the house?
Yes. What I advise you to do is install a vapor barrier on your dirt floor in the basement. And the vapor barrier will prevent moisture from wicking up from the earth. And that will probably solve any mold problems, because mold needs three things to grow. It needs a proper temperature, it needs a food source, and it needs moisture. The food source is wood, and the temperature would exist in your home to grow mold. So you want to eliminate the moisture. And you use a 6 mil thick black poly or plastic sheet. Roll that out on top of your dirt. Extend it over to the edge of your walls tightly. And that should help you out greatly.
Do you put anything on top of that? Because it's what you...
If you're using the basement for storage and things, you'd want to something on top of that. I mean, ideally, you'd pour concrete on top of that. Okay. If you check my Facebook page, West Branch Engineering, I think I have a video on installing poly and pouring concrete relatively inexpensively.
Can somebody pour concrete who has never done it before?
You can. As long as you're not requiring a class A finish, a perfectionist type job, novices, weekenders can pour concrete with a little bit of preparation, a little bit of knowledge.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. More calls coming up. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and Darren Tracy is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. You wanted to clarify something.
Right. I believe on my website that I have a video of installing polyethylene vapor barrier in a basement and concrete, and that's if you Google search on Facebook, West Branch Engineering. I think you'll find the video there. If it's not there, it's on my website, westbranchinc.com. And also, the last caller asked about putting something over top of the poly plastic. And yes, do that if you're going to utilize the basement. Otherwise, you'll tear it or slip on it. Can be an old carpet. Could be some boards. Yes.
You could put a carpet right on top of that?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So really anything. It doesn't have to be pouring concrete.
That's correct.
What about tiles or something?
Well, they wouldn't stick.
You have to put something.
You could put brick pavers. Could be an inexpensive alternative to concrete.
Oh, there you
brick go. Brick or concrete pavers.
Our number here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Corey in Averill Park. Corey, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
Yo, sure.
So I've got another old house question. I got a house that's about 130 years old. I've been looking at doing some, I improved the heating system. I'm looking at adding insulation on the exterior walls. And I keep going back and forth. I think there's some blown-in insulation, so I know there can be a problem with that blown-in insulation where it goes to the settle to the bottom of the wall and it can collect moisture and cause molding. So I'm going to look at putting more more like a vapor barrier and then bat insulation. My question is, I've heard that when you start kind of messing with the vapor barrier, moisture barrier of those old of those old walls, that you can cause problems with moisture buildup. So my question is, what's the best way to insulate a 130-year-old wall?
Okay, I'm glad you called in because I like talking about building science. You mentioned blown cellulose insulation and that settles. It can tend to settle, and you suggested a fiberglass bat as an alternative. It would tend not to attract moisture as much. It's not the insulation that attracts the moisture. It's the path of the moisture going from the interior to the exterior in the winter. So to prevent that, you go ahead and insulate your walls with whatever product you want, whether it's blown-in cellulose or fiberglass bat insulation, or another really good product is a Roxul, R-O-X-U-L. It's a mineral insulation, and it really fits well in between the studs and holds up and is against critters and makes a tight seal. I really like that product. A little bit more expensive, but nice product. Okay, and then on the inside face of that, you want to create a vapor barrier. Older building codes used to require use of a polyethylene sheet, a plastic sheet, as a vapor barrier. That code has now changed such that you can use drywall, which is sheetrock, and then a latex paint on the inside, and the latex paint acts as a vapor barrier. You want to make sure all the openings are sealed well, caulking the bottom around the electrical boxes, any place so moisture or air can't travel. And I would say that you could utilize the vapor barrier. It would not be a bad idea, even though the building code does not require that.
So an unfaced insulation and then drywall and a latex paint?
That's correct. That's a code, but it really has to be installed well, because you can imagine installing a piece of drywall, a sheetrock, on a wall, and there's a gap at the bottom. Air can move underneath the gap into your wall and then cool and condense, and that's where you get the moisture problem. So you've got to keep the air from moving as well as the moisture. So as long as you do a really good job, you can use just drywall, and latex paint, and caulk. And again, using a vapor barrier, although not required by code, up in this colder climate, I do not think is a bad idea.
Corey, thank you for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. We talk home repair, maintenance, and improvement today. And Joshua in Walden, you're up. Joshua.
Hello. I hope this falls under home improvement. I'm trying to build a small structure in addition to a 22 by 22 foot garage, like a small cantilevered structure to basically two supports to store a 16 foot canoe. What do I need to go through the wall from the inside of the garage to like to bolt it on?
Yeah. You could. So if I understand you, Joshua, you want to install some brackets on the exterior wall of your garage.
Yeah.
So as long as you make a good connection with that particular bracket through the wall into a stud, I think it would carry the capacity of a canoe, you know, a few hundred pounds even. So you just want to make sure that you're using a structural screw. They sell those at the big box stores or the hardware stores. And just make sure that you're getting yourself into a stud on the inside. It can't be just through the exterior plywood. It's got to be into the stud. And you want to have an adequate bracket. What are you going to use for a bracket to extend out?
Is where I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah,
Just picturing something kind of cantilevered out at 90 degrees.
Right. Well, you could construct something out of a 2x4, put a 2x4 cleat vertically against the wall, and then extend out a 2x4 horizontally out maybe 3 feet, 4 feet, the width of your canoe, and then come back at a 45-degree angle, and that angle piece will support. It won't be totally cantilevered because cantilevered suggests unsupported on the very end. This will be supported by an angle, but it's a simple way to achieve what you're trying to accomplish.
Okay.
If you have any further questions about that, you can contact me offline. I don't want to go into.
What is your email address?
I'll let you go. Thanks, Darren. Thank God.
What's your email address?
Email is Darren@westbranchinc.com, and that's Darren at West, WestBranchInc.com.
The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Darren Tracy today, Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Ray, my God, you're working overtime these weeks with Joe gone.
Yeah, buddy.
Darren, I hope he's feeling better.
He's getting better, yep.
Good. Darren, I just tried to get a new dryer, electrical dryer for my laundry hooked up, and they took the old one out, and they said, you know, two things. Well, first, it doesn't fit through the door, so I got to take off some of the molding around the door. And the other is... the 220 plug was fried, which may have caused the demise of the last dryer. And they said, don't plug it into that. You got to get that fixed first. And, of course, they couldn't do it. But I'm wondering because, you know, I had my brother here because it was kind of smelly, smelled, you know, like something was burning. And, you know, we couldn't get it to start again. After I had shut it, you know, it had shut itself off, really, you know, just got my last dryer load out of there. And I said, okay, I'm not going to touch it, you know, and my brother was coming up and, you know, he's pretty mechanical. And I thought he could be able to tell me whether it was a belt or the motor or what it was. And at that point, it wouldn't go at all. But now it seems that what was burning was the outlet. And he had gone out there, and he looked at the breakers, and the breaker had not tripped. You know, it was still in the on position.
Okay.
And I don't understand why, if the outlet for the 220 is burnt out, why that wouldn't trip the breaker.
Well, you could have a bad breaker. They do go bad, so that might be one explanation. Your dryer, your existing dryer, may be okay. You may not need a new problem.
Yeah, well, it's gone now. I got the new one here.
It's water over the dam. Okay, well, I'm suspecting a loose connection at the receptacle where the dryer plug plugs in. So I would have a qualified electrician check for...
Yeah, I've already got a call into someone I know who does that.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about that. You know, would the wire, the actual, you know, line going from the outlet to the breaker be a problem also?
It could be. I've seen wires that have been chewed by rodents, and you can get problems that way with a short circuit, and the breaker should trip. I would check that breaker route, though.
That would trip the breaker, too, yeah.
Well,
okay.
It is supposed to trip the breaker. And I would, if you're getting an electrician there, I'd have him check the breaker, because the last thing you want is a breaker not operating properly, and they do go bad occasionally.
Yeah, it's silly because, you know, that would be a shame because they just put a whole new breaker box in when I had work done maybe 5 years ago. You know, so it doesn't seem like it would be the breaker itself, but if it didn't trip and the outlet, you know, burnt, I mean, he said, look, you can see it's burnt right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can happen sometimes without a breaker tripping with a loose connection.
Really?
Yeah, right. Can be just a
loose
connection.
Maybe not an expensive
job. Right. You can, sometimes you'll see, you'll plug something into a wall, you'll see a spark or something, and the breaker won't trip. You can have a certain amount of arcing without tripping the breaker. The breaker is an overcurrent protecting device that draws too much load.
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. Our number on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Kara in Chatham, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have a new house, and it has Marvin windows, big picture windows. It's a very tight envelope, the house itself. And we have a wood stove for backup heat. And these big windows have been, you know, since the temperature started dropping, we've noticed considerable condensation and quite a bit of mold growing in the windowsills at the base where the condensation is. And I understand that that's not completely uncommon. I wondered if you had any suggestions for remedies.
Right. You mentioned building envelope. The building envelope is the enclosure around the building and how tight the building is, and it's tied into some of our previous conversations about tightness in the wall and vapor barriers. I have seen that problem quite a bit. Actually, I have that in my house, and you know, the science behind that is that the warm air in your home goes up against the window, cools, and cooler air cannot hold as much moisture as warmer air, so it cools and condenses out. And can become a problem, particularly if you have drapes on your windows and you don't get a good airflow around your windows, because that isolates air movement, and the window will tend to condense more. Do you have drapes around your windows?
We don't. It's
don't.
Wide open. And some of the windows, you know, it's 22-foot ceilings in the main part of the living space, and some of these windows are pretty high. So, you know, we can go around and wipe the condensation and, you know, maybe use a diluted bleach, I guess, solution to clean the mold. But I was more concerned about up high where we're not opening those windows. You know, I for sure don't want to get on a 20-foot ladder and clean these regularly. So I just, I didn't know if there was something that could be applied to the windowsill that prevents mold, or if there is such a thing. Or,
well, you can apply a diluted chlorine solution. Commercially available in a store, mold and mildew remover, and wipe that down occasionally. Becomes a maintenance problem to have to do that all the time. You could also set up some fans in your home and to move the air more. And if you have a ceiling fan, that would be great to operate that. And that air movement around your window would help evaporate some of that condensation. I know it can be a problem. I actually have varnished windows in my home, and my home's probably 20 years old, and some of the window framing called the muttons are starting to discolor from that condensation. And they have to continuously varnish those, which, you know, there's enough work to do in the world without having to do that additionally. So I really don't have a lot of answers for you other than getting a fan and, and moving air around. But good luck with that problem.
Right. Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. And now to John in Dellington. John, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Darren, I have a I live in an apartment that's early 20th century, and it has a gas-fired heating system. It's got the old-style radiators, cast iron. I have five radiators in this apartment, two in the living room, two in the kitchen, and one in the bedroom. And whenever the temperature reaches this level where it shuts down and then kicks back on, and let's say a half hour or so later, I'm getting a cracking sound out of the radiator that's in the living room, which is the last radiator that goes back in through the radiator into the burner downstairs. Now, I'm kind of curious whether it, that bleeder that's in that radiator should be changed or not.
Okay. It's probably okay as long as you keep your eye on it and it's not leaking any water. It's probably okay. It's probably just a matter of
well, they changed the pipes down in the basement.
Okay.
The last couple of years because of the you know, and the pipes were what 20, 30, maybe 40 years old.
Okay, John. Let me finish. I think I know what the problem is. The problem is just contraction and expansion of the metal in between heating.
That it might be the water and the steam from the radiator converging together.
Well, it wouldn't be it's like that. It's probably not a steam boiler. It's probably hot water. It's probably just a matter of you mentioned your boiler coming on and going off, and that's the way a thermostat is set up in your home, so that it comes on at a certain temperature.
The thing is, I don't have a thermostat. I have a sensor. Okay, because the heat is included in the apartment.
Okay, which acts like a thermostat. In effect, it's doing the same thing. It's turning on and off the boiler.
Right.
Correct.
And there's a temperature differential that that sensor or thermostat is set at. So if you have it set at 67, it drops down to 67, and it may go up to 68 or 69.
Now it's set at 70.
But let me just finish up. It may go up to 68 or 69 before it shuts off, and it'll heat that radiator up, and there's a lot of mass there. And steel, the coefficient of expansion for steel is quite high. So when that cools and expands, it moves quite a bit. So whatever it's touching, there's some micro movement, and you'll hear that contraction and expansion.
So probably
that would
not.
I don't think you have to worry too much. As long as you don't see any moisture, any leakage over there, I think you're okay.
John, thanks for the call. Let's take a break. Darren Tracy is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Little Junior Brown, Peeling Taters here on Vox Pop. 800-3, that's the name of the song.
Okay.
800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today. It's home improvement, repair, and maintenance. Let's see who's been waiting longest here. Looks like Gene and Troy. Gene, you're up.
Hi, I'm calling about the copper gutters on our house. We had them replaced about 4 or 5 years ago. And when we get a big storm like last week, now they're starting to leak in certain areas. And we've had one person say they were going to put like an epoxy seal on it. But don't we need to have those redone and re-soldered to work better? Because the water comes through and we get all these icicles through the gutters.
Gene, if they're true copper gutters, I would not put epoxy on them. I would re-solder those. It may be just a problem of this slushy snow filling the gutter, and the water can't move in the gutter, and it's overflowing. That's the situation that we've had over the past 24, 48 hours where we had a big snowstorm and then rain.
Well, when it rains, you can see water dripping through some of the
seams. No, I would resolder.
So there are a few spots.
Because they're copper.
I'm having trouble finding somebody to do that. So basic roofers should have it or not? I mean, I've talked to the store of Albany Foundation and gotten some people, but...
That would be a good place to start. Not all roofers are capable of soldering copper joints. You could talk with the sheet metal suppliers in the area.
Okay.
So you can research sheet metal suppliers, and they can give you a list of tin knockers that are capable of soldering. Tin knockers.
I like
it. They're just right next door to the potato peelers.
Peeling taters. Gene, thanks for the call. You know, it just occurs to me, if you have copper gutters, you could load them up and use them as good receive antenna.
Is that right?
I'll bet you. Anything. Use it as an AM or FM antenna.
Yeah.
Pick up WAMC even better.
Okay.
Right?
I'll take your word for that.
Why don't you try that, Darren? Get back. That'll be your homework.
I receive it just fine for where we are.
You know what? Ariel in Montague, Mass. You're on. Ariel.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen. This is another vapor barrier type, moisture type mold question. I'm managing a property in Greenfield with a cement basement floor. Doesn't really get wet, but I've been told by a mold consultant that the reason that basement and the attached stairwell occasionally smell very strongly of mold is that moisture just basically sort of vaporizes itself up through the foundation of the building and through this cement floor. And what I'm wondering is there really any way to keep that moisture out besides, you know, laying polyethylene on top of the whole slab of cement and then putting another floor surface in? And when people do that, what happens to the cement in their foundation below? Doesn't it just accumulate moisture and sort of rot out?
No, it doesn't. Concrete will. Cement is part of the product that makes up concrete. People will say cement, but the product that's poured in place is concrete.
Okay.
No, that will not mold. That will stay there forever, and that's fine in a high concentration of water.
Do I have another option besides, you know?
Yeah, there are some coatings. As long as the moisture drive is not too great, there are some coatings out there that might help you minimize the vapor drive up through the slab. But that's what is happening. Moisture from the earth is wicking its way up through the concrete, and concrete's like a sponge. If you don't have a vapor barrier underneath to stop that moisture, it's going to keep wicking up moisture, and that's why basements tend to smell damp and mildewy. And
any specific coatings or ingredients that you recommend?
An epoxy is a good sealer, but again, if you have very much vapor drive, it won't adhere over time.
Okay.
It'll pop off. You could try some products, masonry paints, like a ThoroSeal is one name brand. I'd really have to research that.
Okay.
There nothing works really well other than a polyethylene vapor barrier.
Okay, thanks so much for your help.
You bet, bye.
800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today. Gina in Troy is next. Hi, Gina.
Hi. I live in a small historic building in downtown Troy with four exposed walls, and the house is not insulated. I did have several inches of that foam spray and insulation put up above the ceiling of the second floor between that and the roof, but the walls aren't insulated, and I wondered if there's any kind of paint, something you can paint on that would have an insulating effect. You know, they have these very thin silver blankets they wrapped around people if they're cold.
Right.
And I just wondered if there's any product that you could paint on that has an insulating effect. That's my question.
Gina, the short answer is no. If there was a product that existed, it would be very helpful. But no, you really need something with some depth that minimizes the radiation transfer, the thermal transfer from the cold to
the
hot.
I mean, I know I can take out all the plaster walls and put in insulation. Then I'd have to remove the windows and pull them out so that they would look right. And I don't right. really. It's I can't really afford to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. There's really no simple way you could. Do you have painted walls or wallpapered walls? What is the inside finish of your walls?
It's plastered. They're plastered walls. You know, it's an old house. It's plastered.
Right. Yeah.
There's paint on top of the plaster.
Right. Right. There's really no easy way of insulating a wall. There's no coating that you can apply that would be helpful to you.
That's a great idea, though.
It is a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had some sort of like a honeycomb structure, micro thin, like an eighth of an inch, a quarter of an inch, something like that, that would be helpful.
What do they use on spacecraft? It has to be lightweight and thin and thermally protective.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because maybe we could put that up on the wall.
Beyond my expertise.
All right. Well, we'll look into that. That's more homework. Now, Darren has, if you're scoring at home, he has to hook his copper gutters up to an antenna. To make them an antenna.
Now, you were assuming that I listened to WAMC.
Okay, let's go to the next call. Joseph in Pittsfield. Joseph, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Ooh.
That's all right, Haley. You know what? It's a free country, right, at the moment.
Yeah. Another moisture question. I got a house built in the 50s, a ranch, put a 20 by 24 foot master bedroom on about 30 years ago, put all new windows from guy's first name, all in the house. And the addition was built with a 6-inch wall. So I got a lot of insulation in the walls, a lot of insulation throughout the whole house. And in the new addition, I did put frost walls. And I got about right now, if you were to go down, it's probably 24 mil of plastic. All of my windows in the house are moisture laden, like kind of like your house. I have two questions. Besides one, replacing the windows, because I never liked them from day one because of the moisture, and they're telling me I got a moisture problem. And I have a humidistat in my room, and it's telling me that I'm anywhere at this point in time, anywhere between 40 and 55 percent humidity in the bedrooms. Besides putting in, would a HRV or an ERV work?
What's an HRV and what's an ERV?
Those are units that you install to bring fresh air in. And this time of the year it'd be cold, and you heat that fresh air with the air that you're exhausting.
Ah, okay.
That's HRV, and that saves energy by preheating the air coming in.
Okay.
Then energy recovery unit also takes advantage of the latent heat and moisture, which is kind of like a thermodynamic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the humidistat, and I'm glad you mentioned the humidistat, because the last caller who had a problem with the windows, I was going to suggest that she get a humidistat and find out what the humidity is, because it should be less than 60% this time of year. I know in my home it's really low. It's like 30%. You said you're 40 to 55, so that's not extra high in terms of the relative humidity in your home. What I would suggest is get a fan. Get a fan and move that air around, okay? And replacing the windows might help, but it's a really expensive measure to solve that problem, and you need to get really good windows, maybe even triple pane to solve that.
I have that problem with double
pane windows. You need to get really good windows, especially on tighter homes, air doesn't move around and mix within your home to help evaporate that around your window. So it's a problem. It is a problem.
So it's just not me.
It's not you.
And I understand you. Yeah. So have you thought about putting one of those units in your house? Do you think that would work, I guess?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It's a function of the relative humidity in your house, and that's not too high.
Yeah.
40%, 55% is not too high. So, no, I don't think that is the problem.
Okay.
That would bring some fresh air into your home, and, you know, it's always good with these tighter homes to have fresh air coming into your home. I mean, that's a problem that is widespread out there now with some of the newer homes and tighter additions. Your home is so tight, you're breathing this old stale air.
Yeah.
So you need these units to bring in fresh air.
All right, Joseph, thanks for the call. Now quickly over to Mark in Pittsfield. Mark, you're on.
Yes, hello. I lived in a home in West Virginia, a log cabin. And when I moved in, it was had a wood stove, etc. And, excuse me, I thought that it would be a good idea to use some of the creosote remover in the wood stove. Unfortunately, what it did was cause the creosote to come off in gigantic flakes, fell sideways into the chimney and the flue, and blocked my airflow.
Oh, wow.
So I had to go on the roof in the snow and clean the chimney out. So I just recommend that people clean your chimney before you use that creosote stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that, Mark. As I mentioned at the start of the show, this time of the year, fires are really bad news, and do everything you can in terms of prevention so to minimize the chances of a fire occurring.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for that one. 800-348-2551, the number. Darren Tracy, the guest. Suzanne in Charlton. Suzanne. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sort of, yes.
Okay. Not great cell service out here.
Okay.
We have a 35-year-old house who has double pane windows, but they do not have gas between the panes. And in the winter, when we use our insulated pull-down curtains, they sweat like there's no tomorrow, and the wood is starting to rot because they're wood. Clad indoor vinyl outside windows, and we're don't know if we need to replace all the windows, heaven forbid, or there's something else we can do.
Okay, this is the same topic that a few other callers have brought to our attention today, Susan. And one thing you can do is pull your drapes up a few inches so that air can flow around and evaporate some of that moisture. And again, the principle behind that is that the warm air in the house is moving towards the exterior. It hits the colder windows, and the colder air cannot hold as much moisture as the warmer air. Maybe you've heard this on the science forum on this program. And it rains. It just rains in your house.
Yeah.
It condenses.
So damage to the wood, is there anything we can do about that?
Yeah, depending upon how far gone it is, you can apply a mold and mildew killer to that and coat it every couple of years with a new coat of either a varnish or a paint, I guess.
Okay.
I like paint.
Varnish.
But again, you're going to recurringly have that problem unless you eliminate the source of the problem, and that's the moisture there. And one way to eliminate that is pull your drapes up some. You lose a little bit of energy efficiency.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of a trade-off.
Right.
And mix some air in your house. Get a fan going in your house.
We have ceiling fans, so we do that.
Yeah.
And it's very definitely what you're saying, because our windows that do not have the pull-down shades never collect water.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But it's so frustrating because we want to stop the airflow.
Right. Again, it's a trade-off. I mean, you really don't want your windows to rot out.
Yeah.
So just pull it up an inch, see if that does it. If not, 2, 3, 4 inches, something like that.
Splendid. Suzanne, thank you very much. Now to Jake in Albany. Jake.
Hey, guys. Let me take you off speakerphone.
Great.
I had a question for you. I'm working on an attic right now, converting it to a livable space. It's unconditioned right now. It will be conditioned. And it plays in with the whole vapor barrier and insulating thing. I was going to tell you the process that I was thinking about doing and see what you thought about it.
Okay, go ahead, Jake.
How's that sound? Okay, so it's 2x6 rafters. It's going to throw collar ties across the top and put knee walls up. And I was going to do rafter vent or proper vent or DuraVent, whatever you want to call it, the thin styrofoam. To the underside of the sheathing in between each rafter bay.
Okay.
And then run R21 on. I'll have those rafter vents go from vented soffit all the way up to the peak, which is also has ridge vent in, so it can breathe in both spots.
Okay. I'm not sure all the listeners follow you, but I
know.
So keep going.
I drifted off a while ago. We have 1 minute to go.
Okay, all right, I'll hit you quick. So rafter vent, then R21, because they're 2x6 rafters. That's the biggest I could get. And then in the livable space, it would get, you know, sheetrock, you know, obviously taped, painted, everything. And just to keep my roof cool or hot, you know, in the summer. And I was just wondering what you thought about that, if you thought that was a good system.
I think that will work as long as that proper vent is applied the full length of your rafter bays.
Yep.
Because it's a condensation problem. You want to be able to move air across that surface to eliminate transfer the moisture. So I think that will work.
Well, you know, it's so funny. Everything about condensation today, water and mold. And,
I would rather talk about building science and condensation than plumbing problems. But
did we have one plumbing? We had one
just
heating question.
Just one, heating question and my homework comment.
How do people find you on the internet?
WestBranchInc.com. You can search that. I also have a Facebook page if you search West Branch Engineering and are on Facebook. I have some interesting comments and photos and videos on that as well.
Terrific. Darren Tracy, thanks for being here. Support comes from State Street Fruit Store, Deli, Wines, and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7, statestreetfruit.com. Capital Car Share, a car sharing network offering a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles for neighborhood transportation, 24-hour reservations available online, capitalcarshare.org for donations and information. Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. And Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors with transitional care and rehabilitation therapy as they move from hospital care to another level of care or home, daughtersofsarah.org. Once again, thanks to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thank you for listening. Great calls, most of them about mold, but that's the way it rolls, you know, sometimes. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who only was annoyed once that I could tell during the program. Kayleen White took the calls. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Doctors Susan Sekuli and Chris Dallas join us for another exciting episode of Pets and Vets. Stand by now for the book show.